Let's say your small business has a problem. Like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The Last Word on Today FM.
It's time for the Culture Club, and we're delighted today to be joined by children's author Leona Ford, who has written now 6 Millie McCarthy books for children. Leona, thank you very much for joining us. This has been an incredible success. How many years is it since we saw you first when you brought out the first book?
It's just nearly 3 years. So 6 books in 3 years.
So you're bringing out 2 a year.
2 a year, yeah. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, but really enjoyable.
So tell us, for those who don't have children, who might not be familiar with the Millie McCarthy books, describe them and why it is that they have actually become so popular so quickly.
So the Millie McCarthy books are middle grade books, so they're for kids around 7 to 12, and they follow this character called Millie, and she's from Cork. She goes to a Gael school and she is a complete catastrophe, so she's always getting into little bits of trouble. I think they've become really popular. They're highly illustrated by a girl from Dublin called Karen Hart. So they're really fun. They've got short chapters. And I think they're so popular because kids see their own lives reflected back at them. So there's school tours, there's the moon tour, there's the Cúpla Focail Os Gaeilge. And also there's lots of fun things in them, like poop throwing monkeys, giraffes that get gas. There is... the latest one is a Halloween one and it's set on a farm, which is actually something that a kid in the library said to me one time. He said, I like that you have 2 farmer characters, but there's not enough farming in the books. So I take all the feedback back and I deliver it back to them.
You didn't grow up on a farm though, did you?
I didn't. I grew up in Ballyfihan, real city centre, Cork. You can probably hear it in the accent.
I can.
But I teach in Kinsale and I live in Bandon, so rural area. So I am now well able to distinguish between my John Deere's and my New Holland's.
Yeah, but moving from Ballyfihan to Bandon's a big change, isn't it?
It was a huge change at the time, but I really like it down there now. We're near the 20 years. Yeah. So I feel like I belong there.
Okay. And the books, just tell me a little bit more about why it was you decided to start writing them in the first place.
Yeah, so I wrote them because my own daughter pointed out that all the books she was reading were based either in America or Britain and they were all about boys. And she said, Mom, I never see anything like my life in the books. And she was talking about the fact that she goes to a Gael school. She plays camogie. They were learning tin whistle, all the things, like even things that we'd say at home, like I have to go to the shop for the messages, which is a real Cork thing, you know, rather than for the shopping. She was never seeing anything like this in her books that she was reading. So I started telling her orally stories about this girl called Millie, who get up to all sorts of mischief and do things that she was doing, like get the green flag in school or go on a school tour or attend GAA training. And so I began writing them just for my own children, really.
Was it difficult to get them published?
It wasn't. It is difficult to get published. And my story is a bit kind of different. I sent in a picture book to Gil, and in the conversation I was having with the editor at the time, Venetia, she said, are you writing anything else? And I started chatting to her about this story called Millie McCarthy that I tell my own kids, and they were all oral at the time in my head. And she said, that sounds really interesting. Send me some in. So I then panicked and quickly had to type out a couple of chapters of one of the stories. And from there, then I got a publishing deal.
How much time do you spend on it now?
Now I write at least one entire night. So myself and my husband have a deal. He's a huge snooker fan. So he goes playing snooker one night of the week and I write for the other night of the week. But at the moment, I would write nearly every day and I'd aim for about 500 words every day. But sometimes the story comes into my head and I'll go into hyperfocus and I could sit and write for hours.
I'm interested in that you write for primary school children, essentially, 7 to 12, although you're a secondary school teacher. Why is that?
That's true, because I have primary school kids in my house.
Well, you did when you started. You have a secondary school child now as well, do you?
I have 2 secondary school children now, yeah. So the pressure's on for me to write a little bit of YA. But I think sometimes writers say you write for that part of your childhood that you remember most or that's most vivid to you. And I went back to my old primary school to do a workshop. I was literally walking down the corridor and it's all changed now. But I was saying, this is the cloakroom and this was Mrs. Dennehy's room, and this we used to have the windows painted in here because this was our cinema room and we could get brought in there. And that's where we went out to collect the milk. And I could literally see it in cinematic in my head. I remember everything perfectly. So I think that's why I write for that age group. I'm still that age in my head.
So Millie McCarthy will never grow older, will she?
No,
she'll always
won't.
Be that
she'll
age.
She'll always be 10 and a half. Yeah.
Okay, well, given that you're back in your childhood, we always start the Culture Club by asking guests to tell us about the first piece of music that they can remember buying, the first single usually. Although I believe yours wasn't a 7-inch vinyl, it was
a
cassette.
It was a cassette, so I'm showing my age now. And when I was thinking about this, I said, Matt Cooper is so cool, he is never going to play this song, because the first song I bought on single was Hanging Tough by New Kids on the Block. And it was in HMV, and I remember going in together.
Street.
In Patrick Street, yeah. And it was a white cassette tape with red writing on it. And on the flip side of it was a Christmas song. It was like, Hail Merry Christmas, Merry Merry Christmas to all our sisters and brothers. And I played Hanging Tough over and over on this big, huge ghetto blaster that my dad had, one of these big 80s ghetto blasters. But the rewind button was broken. So I'd have to turn the tape around and listen to a Christmas song all throughout the year, unless I got out my pencil and rewound the tape myself.
Which would take ages, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it's funny because thinking back now, I thought, this is amazing. This boy band, they're all so handsome and so talented. And then you see your own students, you know, when One Direction came out, or when, you know, Take That were out at the time. And it's funny how cyclical it is. It's one of these things that every teenager goes through, I suppose.
Let's remind ourselves of New Kids on the Block and Hanging Tough.
Take a chance. Just get on the floor to the New Kids dance. Don't worry about nothing, cause it won't take long. We're gonna put you in a trance with a funky song. Cause you gotta be hanging tough.
First choice on the Culture Club for Leona Ford, author of Millie McCarthy and the Haunted House, Hullabaloo. New Kids on the Block. Would you still listen to that now?
Definitely not. Although my music is quite eclectic. When I was going through the questions, I was like, God, you couldn't put me into one bracket really, like.
No, you couldn't. Because tell us about your favourite album by Eva Cassidy.
Yes, I absolutely love Songbird. And it was bought for me by my husband when we were in college. And he wrote a little inscription on the album inside, or on the cover inside the CD. And I've listened to that album for about 25 years now. I still, to this day, love it. It just doesn't seem to age. And I asked him why he bought it for me at the time. And he said it was really popular in the charts. And when I looked at it, it was because Terry Wogan at the time had played Somewhere Over the Rainbow on his morning show. And I think because that's one of the songs, you know, that people in Ireland sing in pubs, you know, that it really hit home and it became ultra popular. And so it became a really good...
Or a cover of it.
Yeah, of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah.
So it became really popular over here. But I've used that CD even in my teaching, because I always think that songs, some songs anyway, are like three-act stories. And if you listen to a song, sometimes if you can't get a plot of a short story, I've used it in school loads of times, I'll turn on Wade in the Water or I'll turn on Autumn Leaves. I'll let the kids listen to it and then I'll say, right, let's ask some questions here. Why does she get sad when autumn comes around? Who is leaving? Why are they leaving? Have they been forced to leave or is this their own choice? Do you think they'll come back? And then I'll say, answer those questions. Now place it in a setting. Where is this story taking place? And so I've used that album, listened to it for enjoyment, and then used it in my teaching. And recently enough, my 14-year-old came home and she was like, "Mom, I have heard the most amazing version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow." And she was talking about, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong now, Israel Kamikawa.
I do not know.
He's the Hawaiian singer and he sings it with his ukulele. And I said, "That is good, but have you heard Eva Cassidy's version?" And I played it for her and she was like, "Oh, wow. Why did you never show me this?" I was like, "Oh, let me introduce you to my favourite album ever." And she loves it now too.
Well, the track that we have from Songbird is Wade in the Water.
Trouble the water. Who's that yonder dressed in red? Wade in the water. Must be the children that Moses led. God's gonna trouble the water. Wade in the
Eva Cassidy, with Wade in the Water from the album Songbird. Now, for your favourite band or artist, you've gone for Dolly Parton. Tell us about your love of Dolly Parton.
I've loved her since I was a child. I just think she's one of these iconic women who is ultra feminine, but so powerful as well. And I remember growing up, you know, listening to her songs that would come on the radio. And then when I got older myself, I look back on her older stuff, her older albums, and I hadn't realised how much folk she used to sing as well. And I discovered some of her early albums. But I suppose one of the things that I love most is 9 to 5. Like, that's the song that if I am on the way to work in the car and I need something to give me that jolt of energy, I will blast that and sing along to it. That or Harper Valley PTA. And I will just, puts me in a good mood every time.
Well, we have one of our earlier songs is the one that we have to play a bit of. And you can tell us a little bit about the earlier work once we've heard a bit of My Tennessee Mountain Home.
I love that.
Sitting on the front porch on a summer afternoon, in a straight back chair on two legs, leaned against the wall. Watch the kids playing with June bugs on a string, and chase the glowing fireflies when evening shadows fall. In my Tennessee mountain home, life is as peaceful as a baby's sigh. In my Tennessee mountain home, crickets sing in the fields near. Honeysuckle vine clings to the fence along the lane. Their fragrance makes the summer wind so sweet. And on a distant hilltop, an eagle spreads its wings, and a songbird on a fence post sings a melody.
So that's an example, isn't it, of her earlier work.
Of her earlier work, yeah. And recently I've gotten into podcasts because I had never, ever listened to them before. And someone said, you know, when you're driving, a podcast is great. So the first podcast, of course, I picked was one about Dolly Parton, and it's Dolly's America by Jad Abram. And it tells all about her earlier life growing up in this Tennessee mountain, and how she got into singing with her uncle and going to Tennessee for the first time. And it was absolutely fabulous. And what I really like about her earlier stuff is they're almost like poems. So she's got this beautiful song called Wildflowers. And I was listening to it one time, and it says, "Wildflowers don't care where they grow." And it was all about the fact that it doesn't matter where you come from or where you're born into, you know, if you can make it anywhere. And even though she was born into this rural, really, really poor family, she used her talent and she grew somewhere else and she blossomed. And I just love the metaphor behind it.
Best gig you were ever at?
The only gig I was ever at.
Hang on, you can't be only have ever been at one gig.
I've only ever been at one gig in my life and it was enough for me. So I went to Marley Park with my husband and we watched, it was Santana and UB40 were the people playing at the time. But I had never been to Marley Park before and I wore these big spike high heels and got stuck in the mud and then had to walk out of Marley Park, which I think took about 3 or 4 hours to get out to the road.
It's a long walk, all right.
And after that, I decided, yeah, I'm more of a theatre girl. Give me a seat.
Hang on a second. Hang on a second. Did you not enjoy the gig?
I did. I loved it.
But could you not have gone to more gigs with proper footwear?
No. And we're at this stage now where we have a 14-year-old who's absolutely mad into music and wants to go to gigs. So she wanted to go to Tyler, the Creator, recently. So I had to send my husband with her. I was like, no, I'm not a gig person. It's too many people and too loud. I didn't like it. Now, I loved the music and I've loved UB40 growing up. There was something that was always on the radio when I was young. And of course, I love theatre. So Maria Santana danced to that. All right. But that was the only gig. And I don't think I haven't got any grout to go to them.
All right. Well, we thought it wasn't from Marley Park in 2002, but we do have UB40 from the same year at the Montreal Festival singing Homely Girl.
It's my favourite song.
Well, merci. It must have broke you for a little while, but when the boys used to say, you look better.
UB40 there with Homely Girl. The favourite gig of our guest, Leona Ford, was Marley Park 2002 because it had to be your favourite gig because it was her only gig. So let's move on to movies. We asked for a favourite movie actor or director. You gave us the movie On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando. Before we talk about it, let's hear a clip from it where Terry Molloy, played by Marlon Brando, laments his lost potential as boxer to his brother Charlie, played by Rod Steiger.
How much you wasting? And you weighed 168 pounds. You were beautiful. You could have been another Billy Kahn. And that skunk we got you for the manager, he brought you along too fast.
It wasn't him, Charlie, it was you. Remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Okay. I love that quote.
Very famous. But why have you picked that movie?
Well, I studied film in UCC. It was one of the parts of my English degree. And I remember we studied that film, and it was the first time I had ever come across cinematography, mise-en-scene, symbolism in the film. And I remember my mind being blown. There was one scene where Terry brings Edie up to a pigeon loft, and he's standing inside in this cage where the pigeons are, and she's standing outside, and the lecturer is stopping and going, I want you to look now at the screen. He's inside, he's caged in the world he's in, and she's outside. There's a physical barrier between them. And he passes her this egg from a pigeon, and she said, the egg is the symbol of the life that they could have. He's passing it from one side to the other, but it's so fragile, like a break. And I was like, wow, I have never seen anything like this in a film before, you know, how to actually read a film. It was magnificent. And then the plot, it's got corruption, it's got betrayal, it's got redemption. And then I learned the story of the director. And it's kind of controversial. I remember being given out to someone.
Who was the director?
It was Elia Kazan. And at the time in the 1950s, where there was this anti-communist witch hunt.
The Red Scare.
Yeah. He had decided that he was going to name people that were communist. And he was called a snitch, and, you know, he was betrayal, and he did it so he wouldn't be blacklisted himself. And people turned on him in the industry. But if you look at the film, the plot is very similar to what happened to him. And I wonder, was it him trying to say, look, I had no choice. I had to either save myself by snitching, because kind of Terry's story is a little like that. He decides, right, Johnny Friendly gave me this chance, but I have to tell the truth in the end. I just think it's a wonderful, and Marlon Brando is brilliant in it as well.
That's on the waterfront. So you do love musicals, even if you don't go to gigs, because we asked for
them.
A favourite play, musical, theatre show, and you've gone for Phantom of the Opera.
I have. And it's a funny story. We were on honeymoon. We went to Vegas as part of our honeymoon, and we had just come into the hotel, and I was at the reception checking in, and my husband decided to play a slot machine. His first ever slot machine in Vegas, and lights started flashing and everything was panicky, and he won on the slot machine.
How much?
A couple of $100s, I think over 300. And he said, wow, this is amazing. I'll tell you what, I'll buy you tickets to whatever show you want to go and see. So I said, oh, Phantom of the Opera is on the Venetian, and I really want to see it because it was the show where they had the chandelier on the stage, and halfway through the chandelier falls right over the audience's head. So he went up to buy these two tickets and came back, and he said, I've just spent all my winnings plus another couple of hundred. It cost him way more than what he had actually won, but it was magnificent.
The show was good.
It was brilliant. And I love musical theatre. I've directed three plays in school, and my own daughter is part of the Mumfords in Cork. And she's just performed in her first ever musical theatre. She did Legally Blonde in the Cork Opera House. And she's going to London to see her first ever show. And it's going to be Starlight Express, which was actually the first show I ever saw as well. So I've passed on my love of theatre to her. Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit from Phantom of the Opera. And this is Gerard Butler and Emmy Rossum. Gerard Butler singing there with Emmy Rossum in the Phantom of the Opera.
Funny? I was saying to my daughter, she was asking me, what's your favourite one? I said, Phantom of the Opera. And it's so funny how teenagers view things differently. She said, so your favourite musical is about a creep, a little weirdo, who spies on a girl, sulks around the place, and then controls her and murders people so that he can control her career. And I was like, yes, that's one way of looking at it.
And tell us, where did you see Cabaret?
I saw Cabaret in Studio 54 in New York.
Studio 54 is a nightclub, isn't it?
Yeah,
it used to be.
It used to be a nightclub, yeah, but Cabaret was on in there. And this was during a J1 visa. We had been living in New York. It was actually the year the Twin Towers came down. We were in New York that year. And it was before we went, we were staying in upstate New York, but we had a couple of weeks in New York City, and that was showing there at the time. It was absolutely magnificent, especially because we were in the theatre where all this debauchery would have happened.
Okay, right. Now, let's go to a favourite book or author. And you have gone for Elifer Oliphant Is Fine by Gail Honeyman. Tell us about this.
Now, this was a hard one. I could have named a million books, but this is a book that comes back to me all the time because of the character. So when I first read it, I absolutely hated the character. I thought she was so sarcastic. She was so rude to people. And by the end of the book, I absolutely adored her. And I remember it would be weeks afterwards and I'd be standing, you know, washing the dishes going, God, I wonder, is Eleanor all right? I wonder what she's doing.
Well, she's completely fine. But tell us, what's it about?
So it's about this woman and she's kind of socially awkward would be the best way to put it. And she decides that she wants to get married and have a relationship. But you also have a subplot where there's something really, really dark has happened in her past with her mother. And you discover that she also has an alcohol problem. And you're going along with her and you're figuring all this out. And there's a twist in the end that I don't want to give away, but it's one of these books that just stays with you. You will laugh out loud. There's a scene where she gets her first ever bikini wax. And I remember literally, you know, laughing till it hurt my stomach at how she responded to it. But you'll also end up crying with this book. It's brilliant.
Television. We always ask people, what did they love growing up? What did you love growing up?
As a kid, I was only thinking about this the other day. I actually loved this program called Punky Brewster. And it was only my mom reminded me of it. I hadn't it in my memory at all. And then I looked it up online and I thought, oh my God, I did. I love this. And it was funny enough. It's similar in character to Millie McCarthy. It was this young girl who gets adopted by this old grumpy man and she causes chaos in his house. She's always getting in trouble. As a teenager then, I would have loved Saved by the Bell. And we were allowed to kind of roam a little bit free when we were kids. You came in, you did your homework and then you went out the door. But I would always be back for Saved by the Bell because I had to think for Zach. All of us did at that time. Then I progressed to Gilmore Girls. I love Dawson's Creek. But now I, you know, something I don't get a lot of time to watch TV now. And when I do, I will either choose a cooking show or I will choose historical drama. So I love Downton Abbey.
Well,
I love Lady Mary's.
Tell us
Mary's
a bit more
wish.
About that in a second, because we do have a clip from Downton Abbey where the Crawley family meet their distant cousin Matthew, played by Dan Stevens, and where tensions arise between him, the Earl of Grantham, played by Hugh Bonneville, and the Dowager Countess, played by Maggie Smith.
I will hold it steady and you can help yourself, sir.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
You'll soon get used to the way things are done here.
If you mean that I'm accustomed to a very different life from this, then that is true.
What will you do with your time?
I've got a job in Ripon. I said I'll start tomorrow.
A job?
In a partnership. You might have heard of it, Harveland Carter. They need someone who understands industrial law, I'm glad to say, although I'm afraid most of it will be wills and conveyancing.
You do know I mean to involve you in the running of the estate.
Oh, don't worry. There are plenty of hours in the day. And, of course, I'll have the weekend.
We'll discuss this later. We mustn't bore the ladies.
What is a weekend?
What is it about Downton Abbey that you like?
Well, I love the fact that it touches on history so much, because history is my other subject. I remember watching the show when it had come out and there was an episode, you know, that mentioned the sinking of the Titanic. There was the episode where they had turned the house into a hospital for people who were coming home shell-shocked after the war. But I also love that the characters are constantly fighting with their own morals about what's expected of them in society, but what they actually truly believe themselves. So the movie just came out and I went to see it on my own in the cinema quite happily. And I love that Lady Mary was being shunned because of her divorce. Yet the family was like, well, actually, this is what is society may believe, but this isn't what we believe. And of course, it's got the fashion, it's got the gorgeous house, and it's got Maggie Smith and her wit and the fact that she can absolutely take someone down with three or four words. I love her.
Let's finish with a buried treasure. No, this treasure is not that buried, particularly if you're from Cork. And he's been a guest on the programme previously, but you've picked John Spillane. Yeah. Why?
Because I absolutely adore the man. I think he's brilliant. He is my six-year-old's favourite singer. She can sing The Mad Woman of Cork word for word. She can sing The Dun Stores Girl. And he comes to their school once a year and he'll sing Os Gaeilge and Os Béarla. And he just brings that love of Irish into the schools. But I think if you look at his lyrics, he's a poet above anything else. And I just love listening to the words of his songs and seeing all the imagery in those songs as well. And I just think, you know, we know him obviously in Cork, but he should be known way wider than Cork. And I'll sing his praises all the time because I just think he's fantastic.
Let's hear a little bit of The Mad Woman of Cork.
I see death in the branches of a tree, birth in the feathers of a bird. I see a child with one eye or a woman buried in ice. It's the worst thing and cannot be imagined. I am a mad woman of my mind fills me. I would like to be young, to dress up in silk and have nine children. I would like to have red lips, but I'm 80 years old. I have nothing but a small house with no windows. I am the mad woman of Cork. Go away from me.
John Spillane, The Mad Woman of Cork, and we have been joined from Cork today by
another mad woman.
Not at all. Leona Ford, congratulations on those six books in the Millie McCarthy series for primary school children. The latest one being Millie McCarthy and the Haunted House of Hullabaloo. It's been great having you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.